Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Universal Love Movement podcast show, this special series on accessing ability, where we explore the incredible range of abilities that is all within each of us. You know, you have incredible powers within you, and I'm ready for us to unlock them. And I'm here with the Dr. Megan Myers, my kindred spirit colleague, friend, Dean of Digital Learning at Anne Arundel Community College. I know you as Megan, you know.
That's who
welcome,
I am.
Megan. You want to introduce yourself? What's your title there? Is it Dean of Digital Learning?
Dean of Distance Education, but I will answer to Megan and anything else.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Well, Megan, I'm so delighted to have you on this show. There's so much that we could really dig into, but the title here is The Power of Mindset and Understanding Professional Learning. And when we're talking about accessing ability, you're one of the folks that really kind of motivated me to do this writing project, but then also this podcast, because it's like, hey, I'm not off track here. There are others that actually are in alignment. So I'm really excited to have you particularly on this topic today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, I said the wrong title, Distance Education, Dean of Distance Education. Who else are you that you would want folks to know?
Well, I would say that I'm a faculty member. That's, professionally where I came from. I have a PhD in history, but I think I'm a lifelong learner, right? I'm someone who loves and cares about learning. As you know, I'm a Gallup StrengthsFinder coach, and learners, one of my top strengths. And that's one of the ways that I really identify. So I am always trying to learn, and that's one of the things that kind of pulled me from history, which I always love, into online learning, and to really learning how we learn, right? How do our minds work? How do we learn best as adults? And how can we make sure that we're creating those learning environments to help ourselves and our students really be set up for success?
Wow. So you're a learner, and you're a historian, mm-hmm. and you're a certified StrengthsFinder coach. So there are a number of nuggets there that just kind of make it even more so. So when we're looking at mindset, you mentioned historian, you mentioned being a learner in terms of one of your talent themes for StrengthsFinder. You have this blend, this career where you've actually helped learners, you know, achieve certain outcomes. What would you say, what comes to mind when I ask, why is mindset important in learning? Like, what role does it play in one's learning?
Well,
and this is beyond the, you know, you have the Dweck stuff, all that other, but just your own personal philosophy.
Yeah, well, I think that we all kind of recognize that when we're in a place of stress, if we're in a place of negativity, it is really, really hard to learn a new thing. Right? That you can just think about any time that anyone has tried to, you know, it could be something really easy at the DMV, right? Somebody wants you to learn how to enter information into a new form. How many times have all of us just really had some creative words for that experience, right?
creative words.
and that's because when we are experiencing those kinds of emotions, it's really, really difficult to learn. And so we got to think about what puts us in, and any of us could have these kinds of reflections. How do we enjoy learning? What puts us into a place where we succeed in learning, right? And it's probably not where we're under a lot of stress. It's probably not where we're in a place of negativity. But when we're relaxed, when we feel supported, when we, feel like we're being valued, right? Where we feel energized, right? Where we can engage with other people, maybe. And so really thinking about each of our own personal experiences and how we learn best, and then reflecting on, okay, how can I create that for other people? That's my job. That's something I care a lot about. But most of us have to teach other people things some of the time. Maybe you're a parent and you have to teach your kid how to tie their shoes, right? Maybe as part of your work, you don't teach people all the time, but you really want somebody to learn how to use their Outlook so that you can calendar with them, right? So most of the time we are learning with people. You want your parents to learn how to use FaceTime so that you can FaceTime with them. We are in an environment where we are learning with our colleagues, with our families a lot of the time. And so really understanding how we learn in the best way possible can be very powerful for us both personally and professionally.
That's beautiful. And it all brings to me is this, you would think it would be more popular in education, state-based learning, in terms of just like how people are feeling. And there's so much of what you're saying that makes me think, wow, you know, it does. And you mentioned being a parent, you know, a family member, what have you, and how sometimes we've had to, I know as a child, I've had to learn things under stress and not the most, you know, comforting conditions. What role does that play, you know, when we're talking about learning, in your opinion? So I do know there's more, I have access to more, I have access to more of my brain when I'm relaxed. Is there a role for those folks that say, hey, you can be stressed and learn, and we want to, you know, toughen folks up? And maybe just your, and it doesn't have to be scientific, but your take on that part, given what you mentioned.
Sure. So, you know, we can, and I would say maybe we talk about learning versus performance, right?
Yes.
So I really think maybe some of what that phrase that you're, what that really brings to me is like testing, right? I hear, people really thinking about testing, but to be able to learn to, you know, to imprint knowledge, that is very difficult when we are under stress. You know, is it possible? Sure, it's possible, but it's going to be much more generative when we are not in a stressful environment, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I think we can see that with our kids when our kids are, you know, having a lot of difficulty at school, whether that's social difficulty or whether that's, you know, difficulty with the curriculum. It is more difficult to learn, right? And some of the environments of school, you know, work for some kids and don't work for other kids, right? Being able to sit really quietly for a long period of time works for some kids, does not work for other kids.
Yeah, for others.
Right? And so that stress of like, I need to keep my body quiet, I know that that's a rule of school, that can create stress. And suddenly the cognitive work of, I need to try to learn this phonetic pattern, well, that's much more difficult, because I'm also doing this kind of work of keeping my body quiet, and I'm spending a lot of energy on keeping my body quiet, but now I also need to do this cognitive work. Whereas that other child isn't doing any work keeping their body quiet. That's how they naturally are, right? And they're only focusing on the cognitive work of phonetics. But what that looks like from the teacher's point of view is one kid naturally gets this, is natural in the school environment, this other kid isn't. But that is a bit artificial, right? We've created that school environment for those children, and it just aligns to the way that one child's basically, you know, brain works, and doesn't align right to the way that the other child's brain works, and has nothing to do with the actual learning. Right. So we haven't really talked about, you know, is one child having a harder time learning, you know, phonics, or we don't know. Right. We haven't even inquired into that. We've only just talked about the environment. So I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes sense. There are tons of gems to pull out there. So the just reflecting back, I think there's so much of what you're saying in terms of you, and for the listeners to make sure that performance and learning are different. And I think that's huge, so folks can know, like, you know, sometimes if it's, you can actually know something, and then how your performance is being triggered, it could like really mess you up. But then when it comes to actually learning, I remember I forgot who I said this to one time. I was being snarky to a professor in college. I wasn't trying to be, but afterwards it seemed snarky. I was like, if I had to, it was theater class. I was like, if all acting or something happened where I had to recite lines in front of an audience of 1,000 people while standing on one leg, Okay, great. But sometimes, you know, you can videotape, you can get second takes. And we kind of went back and forth and we were kind of joking about it. But sometimes the assessment, whether it be like in K-12 or in, you know, other settings, they it's that one where some people, as you were saying, will benefit from and others might not be good at. And it actually impacts their learning and impacts their performance. And it has anything nothing to do with their like ability. And that's the show. I really do love what you said, because the show and this kind of movement I'm saying is that we all have these abilities waiting to be unlocked. And it's the, what you had mentioned, the environment, the assessment mechanism, what's being called on. And you mentioned another thing that made me think of like cognitive load, like this extra cognitive load that ties back to the very first like few lines where you were saying people taking care of themselves. What role do you feel like, I'm not sure how to phrase it right now. I just want to have this as a conversation and not be too scientific, but what role does like having your mind at ease play in that type of a, you know, ability to kind of access more positive, you know, mindset in your opinion, when you want a person to kind of feel like they can do it or be more creative? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so I think that's so important. I think that, you know, when we are creating a learning environment, there's a couple things that we really want to do. You know, one is we want to have our learners be comfortable and at ease. And that may not have been the learning environments that we experienced, you know, as we moved through our education, but that doesn't mean that's the best situation for learners, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, a lot of times we are creating what was modeled for us, right? But we don't necessarily want to do that. We want to think what's the best environment. So that best environment, just like you're saying, is one where the learners are going to feel comfortable, valued, at ease. And we want to think about, you know, if it's a physical environment, the physical environment, right? We want to think if it's digital, the digital environment. We want to think about the language that we're using. You know, how are we talking about people? How are we inviting them into their space? How are we asking them to use their own experiences, reflect about on their own experiences in humanity and bring that into the learning, so we know that they are valued and that they can, you know, bring that and share that with the other learners. Those are the kinds of things that can help people feel comfortable, valued, understood, welcomed, right? Having a lot of flexibility in how people participate in learning, and we've kind of separated these two things, and I think it's important, participated in either performance or assessment, right? And so, you know, we talk about this as kind of universal design, right? So, and the importance of universal design in allowing people to say, yeah, I have the competency in this skill, but I might share that competency in a couple different ways. What matters is that I have that competency.
Right? Wow.
And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that really get to the heart of the issue, which, you know, if we're the educator, if you're the employer, you know, can this person do this thing? Right. That's this really thing. What matters. Yeah. Right? Right. And from an equity point of view, I think that, and, you know, hopefully over the past 5 or 10 years, people are not looking at, you know, how people are dressing, all these things that people used to use as screeners, which really, you know, how just really come from a place of pulling people that were just like them, right? We want to reproduce people who are just like me in this environment. And instead say, what do I need? You know, what functions does this role have? And can the person do this function? And they may come from lots of different rich experiences. And that rich experience is actually going to make either the learning environment or the team stronger, right? It's better if we all come from different, you know, parts of the world, different backgrounds, because that's going to give us different perspectives and going to make, you know, that output. If you're on a, you know, professional team or in an educational experience, that's going to help us learn more.
Oh, I love it. It's tracking for me, and it's okay. So first, it's like, first and foremost, what is it that you need people to like do? And then like, and how they need to perform that, and what do they need to learn? and then they need to be, there needs to be a sense of comfort and ease so that their brains are working, and then be able to teach to and, like, you know, evaluate and assess that versus all the ways that we've done just because we want to do it and because it's very fun. Did I summarize some of that, you know,
exactly,
correctly?
And really, yeah, create like fundamental flexibility about around everything other than the pure competency, right? Mm-hmm. And that really helps, I think, learners get to, and this is, you know, part of your, what you started with that mindset of ease and comfort, right? So if I know that it, all that matters is that I can show X, right? I don't have to worry about, you know, for, we went back to that child where they can sit still. I don't have to worry that I can sit still. I can walk around, right?
Right, get more, yeah.
My body more comfortable, whatever is going to help my mind. You know, I will say sometimes my brain works better when I can walk, right? I need to kind of walk around, and then I can think through something, and that really helps me think through a difficult issue, right? So all of our brains work differently. And if we can really work with people to help us understand that our brains working differently, that is an asset. That's a benefit.
100%.
As opposed to being a drawback. And I think so many of us grew up in systems that said, you know, there's kind of one model. And if your brains, and most brains diverge from that one model, then that's not okay. You have to really work hard to conform. But instead seeing, actually having this great myriad of ways that all of our brains work and all of our bodies work, that is a huge asset for each other, right? And so if we see that in ourselves, that also builds our confidence and our comfort as we work together and learn from each other.
Yeah, I love it, Megan. And it's just so applicable across the board. And that's the beautiful thing about what we do, is everyone has to learn something, right? It's never going out of style. You know, even when robots are doing more things, we have to learn how to work with the robots and be more human so we can. So what you had just, you had mentioned, and I don't want to misquote you, the last word you had mentioned there, but the word I thought about is personal learning, which is, you know, part of the title of this show, you know, the power of mindset and personal learning. And you were saying, learn what works for you, just to kind of paraphrase. And, you know, it's interesting, just as a quick example that made me think of, I remember when I was learning to, like, drive. And when I would get into the car with my brother, who he was not supposed to be teaching me how to drive, but he used to be so chill and relaxed about it. And I was chill and relaxed. And then when I would get in the car with, of course, the driving instructor, or, you know, I won't say another name of this other person because they're part of my family. It was hard, and I wasn't able to drive. But what's interesting is it was those 10,000 hours or how many ever hours at ease that then when I was in the car with my brother, I can't think of anything that I've learned that, and I think it was just taking me longer, not I think, I know, it was just what taking me longer to learn in that kind of stress state. And it's kind of interesting because folks do say, oh, you can drill them or whatever. But from what I hear you saying, what people need to learn about how they learn best, obviously, and that's part of what we'll talk about. But then after that point, then the performance can then be elevated in advance, but you have to build on a very, but I think there are a lot, there's much school of thought that makes it think that just drilling folks at first is most efficient. And, you know, we know from research that that's just not correct. So if a person wants to know so they can manage up, manage out, and kind of be self directed and help themselves, how would you say, like, how would you define personal learning? And let me kind of phrase this like in the best way. So we're thinking about personal learning. How does one go about understanding their personal learning? Because, you know, there was the whole learning styles, and we know that there's like not a style, and there's the whole learning. There's so much to that, and it's like the best thing to know. So what do you say to that in terms of just a person's path to understanding their own personal learning approach?
So, you know, I think that we all are going to learn, you know, differently. Our brains all work differently. Our bodies all work differently. And I think the best thing that we can all do is be reflective, right? And it's hard to be reflective. Our world doesn't really, it doesn't reward that. But just like you did, you just modeled for us thinking about a time where learning was hard and learning was easy, right? And really thinking through, it doesn't have to be learning the way that we think about learning Socrates, right? It doesn't have to be learning in a very formal situation. It can be learning to drive, learning to cook, learning, right? Any kind of skill that was either difficult or easy. When is learning enjoyable too? I mean, I think that's a really important thing, right? How do we enjoy learning? And so really thinking about those kinds of instances, how do I like learning, right? How has learning been effective for me? And for some people, you know, being able to learn alone, being able to, you know, reread something, to have that think time, that's really important, right? There's some people who that's just the way their brains work. They need that additional processing time. They want to have quiet. They don't want to have interruptions. And so they might really enjoy, you know, reading and watching videos and kind of having really self-directed learning. And other folks are, you know, really enjoy being with people and they want to have really collaborative learning environments, right? So there isn't just going to be one answer, but it's really thinking about what has worked for you. And you know, the word that we use this is metacognition, right? Learning about learning, right? Learning about ourselves as learners. And so, you know, as we learn different things, asking ourselves the question, what worked well about that? What didn't work well about that, right? Making predictions for yourself, right? This time I'm intentionally going to try this strategy. I think it's going to, create this result. And then on the back end saying, did it work? Did it not work? Right? Having that kind of prediction, assessment, reflection in our own learning really helps us grow as metacognitive thinkers. It's a really big word, right? But just to say, learning about our own learning, right? And as we do that, we will see what works for us and we'll see that we change over time, right? Because our brains and our bodies are also changing over time. So we're not going to necessarily learn in the same way when we're 20 as we do at 60 or at 80, right? The way that we learn and that we prefer to learn what works for our brains might change over time as well. But it's just keeping engaging in that process of what's working for me, you know, how do I want to evolve, right, as a thinker and as a learner.
Megan, I love it. And I, you know, when you mentioned the word fun, I was like, I kind of like jumped up. I'm like, that's me. And he mentioned people. I'm like, that's me.
Yes.
And I remember when, you know me, I learn best with people and having fun. Mm-hmm. Some people, they're like, okay, no, this is time to learn. And, you know, it's not fun time. And I'm like, it's time to learn. It's fun time. I remember when I was an undergrad and there was this thing that we called, it was psychology class. It was like my sophomore year. And long story short is I went from like a 64 to getting an A in a class and turn around real quick. And when I was chatting with Dr. Wells, who shout out to Dr. Wells at Kutztown University, my undergrad, she's like, so what happened, Carl? And how did you turn around? And I told her about the round robins. And that was my first metacognitive kind of moment of like thinking about the thinking and learning and knowing. So now I know if I'm in a group with a group of people, we called them round robins. We were just like, go around and test each other. When I'm with a group of people having fun, I can learn anything. And that's the power that we want to get to everybody right out here that's listening. Like, you can access new abilities. You can learn anything. And learning anything adds to new abilities. And what you just painted is pretty promising for folks, right? Because imagine all the folks out there, Megan, who think otherwise, right? Who think, or who have been kind of like, you know, it's an interesting world out here, right? You know, in terms of how certain kind of narrow bandwidth will kind of can be weaponized as well. So some folks can feel like, hey, I'm great and you're not. So there's a lot there. There's a lot of power in that last piece in terms of applicability to everyone in every nook and cranny, right? That doesn't not apply to anyone on this earth.
Exactly. And that it is how you define it, not how you have been defined. Right?
That's huge. Yeah.
You know, you may have been defined by, you know, a school system or an employer or a teacher or whatever in a particular way that might have felt punitive or, you know, not aligning to, you know, how you felt about yourself. And unfortunately, you know, I hope we get to a world where that doesn't happen anymore. But many people of adult age have had that experience, right? And that's just unfortunate. But the reality is, you know, as a learner, you are defining yourself, right? You have the ability to, you know, say who you are as a learner, to really look at your strengths and say, this is how I learn best, is through these strengths. This is what I bring, right? And how I value myself and, you know, how I want to go forward, right? And so, you know, I think that's important too, because I think, you know, I've worked in a community college setting, and we do see students who come in sometimes with a negative mindset around learning because they have been told, you know, that they're not good at it, right? And that's really, really unfortunate, as opposed to being able, you know, really working with those students to show them you are a brilliant learner, and here is the way that your brain works, right? And so capture that and go forward with that and feel empowered, right, to learn in the way that works for you. And that might not have been exactly with the message that you got in the past.
Yeah, and that's why I love the work, and why I was attracted to, and that's where we met, working at a community college, because being in those spaces, exactly, to have that opportunity to empower folks across, like, as you know, from high school to an adult with a different new career. And that's why it's awesome that they have you there in Arundel, Megan, because that's life-changing. You know, as humble as we may want to be, that's huge. That's huge, right? There's nothing without that. And you, okay, so you mentioned the word mindset again. I don't want to make sure to get your, like, definition. And I want to, I'm going to shift the conversation, talk a little bit about technology, because I know that's a part of, you know, what you do. You fuse all these things together. How would you define mindset if someone were to say, if you were teaching someone about mindset in like a few sentences, and what is mindset and how can one grow it positively to do what we're talking about? I guess that's the best way to phrase it.
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever I hear the word mindset, I think we all think of Carol Dweck, right? And this kind of growth mindset. And that is, you know, probably the most important place to start, which is when we, you know, encounter an obstacle, do we think of that obstacle as okay, I've hit this problem and I need to go sit down and stop trying? Or do we see it as a learning opportunity, right? And I think also what we've been talking about today is how the people around our learning see it. Do they see that obstacle as something that means that we, you know, aren't going to be successful, or do they, or do,
yeah, that's huge. That's a huge part. They don't talk about that often.
Do those other people see that obstacle as a learning opportunity for them and for the student, right? But that mindset really allows us, you know, as I mentioned, I'm a historian, and I really try to bring this out when I'm in the classroom. And, you know, when I would teach ancient history and we'd look at the pyramids, sure, I talked about, you know, the Great Pyramids of Giza, but I love to show all the pyramids that collapsed, right? So we talk about all the failures that happened before we get the Great Pyramids.
Because, oh, that's an awesome strategy. Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, it's not just like one day, you know, you woke up and you were able to build this amazing engineering feat. There was a lot of failure that came with, you know, before that, but that failure was allowed for this huge amount of learning and growth, right? And that's how they understood it. They understood, okay, what can we learn from this? Yes, this collapsed. What, you know, why, right? And how can we build something better and bigger and stronger as an outcome, right? So I think that's a kind of important component of mindset is, you know, do we understand that every time that, you know, something difficult, obstacle arises, you know, how can we get stronger and better from that difficulty? And that's hard. It's emotionally hard in the moment, right? But how can we take that as a learning opportunity as opposed to like some kind of judgment on ourselves? And I think that's really important to say, this isn't a judgment on me. This is an opportunity for me to grow.
I love it. I love that. It's like, what do they say? Failing forward, learning up. You know, it's interesting, not until like even a couple, few years ago that I view failure as like an opportunity. You know, it's kind of like the whole opportunity thing, peace and positive psychology. I love what you're saying. Mindset isn't just about viewing it as like, hey, being positive, I think I can. But in the moments that you do not, this is what you're giving to the world, Megan. I'm just paraphrasing. In the moments where you are not, that is actually a part of the learning. That's huge. That's huge synthesis of all that there. So really appreciate that. I hope folks can access that and pass that forward because it's a big thing. And nowadays, especially with like the emergence of AI, well, the pandemic did it first and then AI, people have to learn so much more about technology. And there are folks that are like shaking in their boots or like, you know, in their mind. And there's not enough vulnerability all the time to say, hey, I don't. And that's another reason it's like, hey, you can access new abilities. But some of what you mentioned helps with people with the technology part. But if you can speak on, you know, technology has become an integral part of just society, period. And even more so, how can people effectively approach their, using the mindset all that we talked about, the ability to learn about technology and or teach others about the leveraging of it if they are already on the like the end of, and I know those are that's two big questions all in one.
Yeah.
But you can just, you know, take your time to share about that. That'd be great.
So I'll say, you know, that everything we've talked about applies, which is if we're in that state of agitation and fear and stress, it is really difficult to learn, right? And so a lot of times when folks are struggling with technology, it is because of that state, right? And if we sometimes just get up, walk around the house, take a deep breath, come back and sit down, half the time we will have seen the answer ourselves, right? I don't know how to do this, but maybe we do know how to do it. It's just we're not accessing that part of our brain in that moment because technology can kind of trigger our, you know, anxiety responses. And we don't access all of our brains when we are in that state of anxiety, right? So one thing I think as when we're in that user perspective, that, you know, that learner, not the teacher, when we're in that learner perspective, we got to try to really use all of our tools to get out of our stress response because it's very, very difficult to, you know, function when we're in that stress response. So go grab a cup of tea, grab a glass of water, walk around the house, take a deep breath, right? So that would be like my first thing. And then the second thing I would say is, you know, we see that technology is changing really fast. And the benefit of that is, I think, you know, 20 years ago, it was like, oh, young people are great with technology, older people aren't. No, technology is moving so fast. We all are learning technology all the time. So there
is. That's huge. Everyone's learning together. Sorry.
Exactly. Everyone's learning together. There can be no feeling of like, you know, I am behind, because I need to learn this, right? Everyone is learning about AI, right? AI is changing. You might have known about AI last week. Well, AI is different this week, right? So we are all learning about AI. We are all learning about technology. It is fundamentally changing all the time, and that's okay. And so that's where we have to keep in that curiosity, right? We have to keep ourselves as lifelong learners. We have to know who we are as learners, that metacognition, right? And just say, we're not going to master this. This isn't like a, you know, I'm not a chef, but this isn't like, I don't know if you can go and master a particular dish and say, I have mastered this dish and I'm done with it.
Right.
We're not going to get there with technology. And so to come to some kind of comfort level with that, right? This is something where we are going to be evolving with technology, you know, indefinitely. And so that's okay, right? We're just going to keep learning as technology changes. So I think those two things are two things as learners that I think are really, really important, right? using your metacognitive skills, getting out of your stress responses, understanding that you're not going to master, you're not going to badge yourself out of this. I have 12 badges, now I'm done. Nope, right? We're going to just keep learning forever. On the perspective of, you know, kind of teaching technology, I do really think that there are some people who are really comfortable with using technology to teach technology, right? So those folks are going to be really happy to go into LinkedIn Learning, you know, using all of the tools, right, of technology to learn a new technology. But there are other folks who need a human to teach them technology, and that's okay too. And so making sure that we have both of those resources available for the different types of people. And sometimes people only need that human one time, right? And it is, I just need to help getting over that hump, right? Maybe it's a psychological hump, maybe it really is a technical hump, but I really need that human one time.
This is, continue, this is huge though, because humans will still have value, right? There are folks that are like, oh, you know what? Humans won't be needed. There are always going to be folks who benefit from learning from a human. So continue. That's actually a really, really important distinction for the folks who may be worried about that, naturally so. But yeah, please continue.
Yeah, so, you know, when we think about teaching technology, we want to make sure that we have both pathways for folks, a human approach and a technology approach, and we're not forcing people down one or the other, right? But we're giving them, you know, the path that's going to suit them best. And then, you know, when we think about how are we going to leverage technology, right? I always really want to, you know, think about with my teams, how to leverage technology to do the things that are, you know, a real pain for humans, and then let humans focus on the real value that we bring in our humanity that is different, right, than what technology can bring. So, you know, if we think about teaching, there are things that are, you know, difficult as far as kind of like analyzing trends and grade patterns that can kind of take a long time if you're really staring at your grade book and, you know, kind of compiling that. That's, you know, tedious. But, you know, providing really thoughtful coaching and feedback, that's something that really, you know, your humans are going to do a lot better than your technology, at least at this point, right? So where are we going to get that value from humans versus the technology, and being really thoughtful for where we deploy what, because it can feel alienating when we put technology in the wrong place, right? So we want to be, I think, mindful about where we put our humans and where we use our technology as people and as organizations.
I love that. There's so many nuggets. The humans being involved and people needing sometimes that human. And then what you just mentioned there about where we place them, I just, there's so much there. And I know folks have heard it, so I don't have to summarize again, but I just get so excited and I summarize those things. So there's another piece that I think ties into this as it relates to being like a supervisor, a leader, when you have to teach folks about whether it be their learning something new on the job, whether that's technology or not. So what wisdom do you have for folks when we're talking about the power of mindset as we kind of, you know, kind of close out here, the power of mindset and personal learning? What wisdom do you have for folks that are in leadership positions like yours, or even folks that may be like subordinate and they need to kind of, whether it's, I don't like the word manage up, but kind of co-create the experience and, you know, partner with, you know, others to learn? As it relates to just their ability to kind of continue to advance and move forward, and then and even leveraging that technology. And I know everything that we've discussed in the show, if you apply that, it, you know, but just to make it explicit for folks, I think would be really helpful.
Yeah, so I think when we're thinking about our teams, you know, what, yeah, everything we've talked about I think applies, but also really, you know, differentiating for people. So understanding that the way that we learn isn't going to work for everybody else, right? And like you, I love learning in a group. I love having fun when I learn. I love that collaborative piece. And I have to just remind myself, I always have introverts on my team. I always have people who are going to want to be, you know, quiet, reflective learners. And so I try to be super, super intentional to say, okay, how am I going to make sure that I, in some ways, prioritize that type of learning for those folks? Because otherwise, it's really easy for me just to rely on what works for me. Right. And so making sure that within your team, people feel comfortable with always highlighting, hey, wait, that's not going to work. You know, maybe that exercise isn't going to work for so-and-so, but also really prioritizing in our own minds. Right. Having a thought of like, okay, who are the people who are going to learn differently? And how am I going to make sure that when we do team learning, that I'm creating that flexible environment that is going to allow everyone to bring in their genius, their knowledge, their best selves, and really participate and feel valued. Because I think that the danger, and this is true with all learning, is that people don't feel valued, right? It's when people feel seen, it's when people feel valued. You know, we can mess up, we are going to mess up, right? That's just part of life. But as long as we are showing people that we value them, and then when we mess up, say, okay, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that wouldn't work for you in this way, then people are going to say, okay, great, yes, please, you know, that's no problem. But we really want to be as thoughtful as we can to make sure that people have that that sense that they are valued as learners, and of course as employees and team members and everything else, but for our purposes here, right, as learners.
Yeah, Megan, I really appreciate that. And I wanted to dig into that one area just because, you know, when we think about teaching and learning, I've been on a mission to make sure to think about just learning in general, whether it's like life and as you have, and not just the classroom, because most of the learning occurs outside. And then the second most, you know, place it does or does not is in the workplace, right? So yep. I've been, there's another podcast series I have that will be like launching right with this one or after. It's the Leading Through Unconditional Love, which, I mean, in many ways, it's just humanized leadership, right? How do you value people and do things in a way that's most humanizing? And a lot of what you shared during this episode really does help folks understand how they can humanize for themselves. Right. Don't be dehumanizing to yourself and thinking that you're a robot, that you either work or you don't work. Right. You know, yeah. So I really appreciate that, what you just shared there. So I want to give you an opportunity to share anything that you have not shared as it relates to, you know, the power of mindset and, you know, for folks understanding their, you know, their own personal learning. We talked a little bit about technology. We didn't get too heavy into it, which is actually good, because it's something that you shared, like, you know, I think you shared at the very beginning or even before the show. It's more about the broader approach towards it. So just wanted to see if you had any other like closing thoughts or words as it relates to just, you know, the power in this episode, the power in like what we're providing in terms of what it can do for folks.
Yeah. So, I guess the thing that I would close with, and I think this is true for technology, I think it's true for everything, is, you know, as a society, there just is a lot of change, right? That change could be with technology, that change might be in our organizations, that change might be in our personal lives. And, you know, being a kind of flexible learner, understanding how we learn, that is going to help us all navigate that change, right? Whether that's technical change or non-technical change. And I would just, you know, urge all of us, and we've talked about, you know, ourselves, to give ourselves grace and also to give each other grace, right? Because often when our teams, you know, they're going through the same personal, professional, society-wide change as everyone else. And so I worked with a wonderful instructional designer at my last position, Maureen Martin, and she would say, you know, we're responsible for our second thought and our first action, right? And so you might have that first thought, like, I can't believe that person said that thing to me, right? But, you know, take, what's that second thought? well, what are they, what's happening with them today, right?
That's huge. Yeah.
You know, like what's going on with their kids? What's going on with their, you know, professional life? What's whatever, right? And to try to offer each other, and then our first action. So how do we actually respond to them? So that second thought, what are we actually thinking, right? And then our actually, how do we respond? And so I think when we can give as much grace and understanding to each other, it can help us through these times of incredible change. And you know, in terms of technology, we are going through, if you work, you know, anywhere close to technology, and almost all of us do now, it is a time of a lot of change. And so to try to build in that grace and understanding for ourselves, and to try to build in that grace and understanding of each other, you know, most of the time our brains might go, oh, right to that negative place immediately. But when we are curious, when we take that moment, we ask a question as opposed to make an assumption, we'll find out, oh yeah, it didn't come from that negative place, right? It came from confusion. You know, maybe that email just wasn't written in, you know, it was an email misunderstanding, right? That's not always the medium that creates the greatest understanding. So that's, I think, the thing that I would also kind of encourage us all to do, is really try to embed understanding and grace for ourselves and for each other, because that really helps with that mindset, right? The whole theme of today has been mindset and learning, and I think that helps our own mindset, and I think it helps our organizational mindsets to do the greatest amount of learning.
Oh, I appreciate you. And curiosity, folks, grace, I really do appreciate that. Those are really good wisdom nuggets just for life in general, Megan. All this is so applicable. We do appreciate you, Dr. Myers, Dean of Distance Learning at Anne Arundel Community College. But much more than that, you are, I don't want to throw out your other social identities and elements here, but just to say that I appreciate you, because I know that there's a common thread of how you operate in all fronts of your life, whether personal or professional, that really just speak volumes. So I appreciate you for joining us today on Universal Love Movement Podcast Show. Thank you all for listening. We know that you have powerful superpowers waiting to be unleashed. So let's do it. And in this episode on the power of mindset and professional, I'm sorry, not professional learning, the power of mindset and personal learning is something that I'm hoping that you could, you know, pay for it or pass for it, but most importantly, apply to yourself. A last word or a thought bubble, feeling bubble, or anything from you, Megan, before we close out here?
Just a thank you for having me, and I am excited to be able to listen to all of your audio content over the coming days and weeks.
Thank you so much. All right, folks, you all take care, sending lots of love and light.